Få det bedre med deg selv med relasjonspodden.
Hei, jeg heter Marianne, og jeg digger relasjonspodden. Fordi da føler jeg at jeg en del av en stor, varm, raus, inkluderende, herlig gjeng som tør å dele både sorg og glede her i livet. Og så lærer jeg så mye.
Hør relasjonspodden gratis der du hører podcast.
Martin Daudi fra Island skal spille I Trondheim og Oslo snart. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og har plukket frem et gammelt intervju med guttene, som vi skal høre her på Jernverket. Før vi kjører intervju har jeg en beskjed til deg. For at Jernverket skal overleve som podcast, så trengs det midler. Dagligvarekjedene og mobiloperatørene ikke spesielt interessert I heavy, men det forhåpentligvis du. Jeg har opprettet en Patreon-side og en VIPs-konto, så hvis du vil bidra med noen slanter for å holde jernverket flytende, hadde jeg satt enormt stor pris på det. Du kan donere via PayPal på patreon.com/jernverket, det staves Patreon, eller via VIPs-nummer 567438. All informasjon står nederst I episodebeskrivelser med en lenke som fører jeg rett til kassen på Patreon. Igjen, tusen takk for alle bidragene. Jeg klarer ikke det uten deg.
I'm sitting here with Svarte Daudi. Maybe you can start by just telling me your name and what you do in the band.
Yeah, my name is Sturla. I sing and play bass.
And you're not joining it.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. My name is Nakwi. I play guitar.
Nice to meet you guys.
Likewise.
So, we can just start with the beginning of Svarte Daudi. You've been going on for about 10 years now? Was it 2002 or something? I think I read
something
that.
Something like that. We didn't play any shows or release anything till 2006, so... kind of just use that year as a rhythm myth reference point.
Yeah, like what did you do the years before you gave out albums and started playing shows?
Got into trouble. So yeah, just wrote stuff, you know, just being teenagers, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, because you aren't that old, so you've been in a band for quite a big part of your life.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He's the senior.
Okay, but tell me about the beginning of Svarte Daudi. Why did you want to start a black metal band? How is the scene in Iceland? How do you?
There has never been any scene in Iceland. Mm-hmm. Not when we started and not today. You know, 10 years later, but there was never any, you know, concrete scene or anything. There was no other bands going on. So we were forced just to make our own stuff, you know, instead of just accepting the nothingness that was going on. We had to create something for ourselves. So I guess that's how Svarte Daudi came into being.
But how did you find each other? I reckon there isn't a big metal stage in Iceland at all.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually. One day we didn't know each other, and then we knew each other the next day. So.
But are you all from Reykjavík?
No, we're from Kópavogur.
How big is that city?
2,000 people. Yeah. No, 20,000 people.
Right next to Reykjavik. Yeah.
Just outside of Reykjavik.
So some kind of suburb.
Yeah, something like that.
But where did this interest come from? Since there weren't many other bands or people like you listening to metal, where
came from Norway. I don't know.
The interest in making music, or I don't know. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I've always been making music, and just it's natural for me to start a band. I don't know. I mean, why the fuck not? You know, because we ain't got nothing going on except, you know, making our own stuff.
And, something like Svarte Daudi was missing.
Yeah, exactly. Just from the music scene in general. Yeah. So, I mean... like when I first got into metal before the internet and all that, you know, you had to find everything on your own, and I at least didn't have good access to extreme music, so I wanted to make music that was more extreme than the music that I have already heard, you know what I mean? So yeah, I guess that kind of just came from there.
Mm-hmm. But you say that the scene was older, or the world was missing something like Sorted Ode.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? What makes Sorted Ode different from all the other bands?
Well, first of all, we are Sorted Ode, so that makes us quite different.
That's a good question. Very good question. What makes Sorted Ode different?
Well,
I agree that you are, because you aren't like the gulp that very many black metal bands today are.
Mm.
But why?
Okay, I would say we're young. We kind of share the same.
We don't grow up in the same kind of dogmatistic thinking as a lot of the metal heads on the continental Europe. You know, when you come to Norway, you, of course, obviously have this history of the old bands, and then you see, like, how the people in Germany are, or whatever, all over Europe. They all have this dogmatic way of thinking about metal. Like, before they get into metal, they have an idea what a metalhead is. We didn't have that. We just, because metal was non-existent for the most parts until we started in Iceland, before we started making our own. And since we always been from the start forced to make our own way, our own path, I don't know. We don't. I think that that's a lot to do with the kind of cultural isolation that we grew up in. That we don't have this. We have to sound like this guy or look like that guy or, you know, have a logo like this band, whatever. We just do what the fuck we want. And that's what works best for us. And that's how Svarte Død is different from other bands, because we don't have this predetermined goal of being that band, to sound like Slayer or to sound like Mayhem or Dark Throne or whatever. Just do what we feel like doing, and I think that makes us different from other metal bands.
That's a good answer. But where do you draw inspiration from then, since you're different and you don't feel you have to be like anyone else?
Yeah.
Where do you begin when you write a song? Where do you draw?
African slave trade. I don't know. Something very different.
I don't know. I mean, it could be, you know, I think we're in equal parts we are inspired by stuff like the old Norwegian bands or stuff like The Swans or Enstrus and the Neubauten or, you know, Merspo or, you know, Wu-Tang Clan, you know, whatever. So I'm sorry, what was the question again?
I was just wondering where you begin when you start writing a song. Where did you find the inspiration?
Usually begins with one of us comes up with a riff, and then the next guy writes something to that riff, and the next guy, and the next guy.
It can be a painful process, a very long process.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have a song, one song we're playing tonight. I think it's like, maybe it took us like 3 years to finalize, just working on like 7-8 songs at the same time. It's very strange way of doing things, I'd say.
Yeah, because it took quite a few years before your debut album came out. You made a few demos before that.
Only one official demo, really.
Okay. Can you tell me about the demo?
The official demo? It's called The Temple of Deformation. We wrote that and recorded back in 2006. And
the lineup was different.
Yeah, the lineup was completely different.
Okay.
And
who was in the van and not?
I was in the band. He was not. It was me and Thorir, the other guitarist. We were in the band back then. Magnus and Nakwe.
Okay.
Is the drummer Magnus?
Yeah, where were we? We were talking about the demo from
2006. The Temple of Deformation. That's a three-song demo. We wrote it. Contains some of the earliest stuff we ever wrote. And did that on tape back in 2006. Distributed that in a few hundred copies all around the world. And yeah, that's pretty much the story of that.
But did people like what they heard? I didn't hear about Sorted Out until maybe a year or a half ago.
Yeah, well, the thing is,
I think the demo actually got into Ule's hands.
Yeah, well, yeah. He was the... Ule from Territory Possession was the... one of the first people to distribute the demo back in the day when nobody gave a shit about us. So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it sold like 500 copies or something. And that is like back in 2006, so we didn't follow that up. We started writing new stuff and getting into more trouble and stuff like that. Then we actually wrote a whole album, which we threw away.
Oh. What happened to that, and why did you throw it away?
Well, we recorded most of it, and then we took a few months break. And when we came back together, we listened to it and decided that we can do much better than this. So we just said fuck it and threw it in the trash and took the next 2 or 3 years to write the what would become the Flesh Cathedral album. So.
And then you got in contact with Ole again, and you talked with him all the time because he gave out your album.
Yeah, he released it along with Demon Worship in the United States. And yeah, I mean, we played in Trondheim, the Nidrosian Black Mass in 2010. Well, and there
he's there. I've seen you before.
Really?
Yeah. All right.
But yeah,
I guess that was a starting point.
Yeah, that was kind of like a rebirth for us, you know, because then we completely changed the lineup. I don't know if we changed the directions or just evolved. But we recorded 2 songs and made like a really small batch of demos for that festival, which then got leaked online, and that contained like half of the songs from the Flesh Cathedral album. So yeah, thanks to illegally pirated media, we became world famous and conquered the world.
So you're a fan of illegal coping.
I'm a fan of a lot of illegal things, but yeah, sure, coping, whatever, it's cool.
So when did you decide to work with Ole and the American company when giving out?
Yeah, well, we actually had we were in a position that we could pretty much choose you could choose from labels. We had like 15 different record offers.
Wow.
At the time, and you know, a lot of some labels bigger, you know, with deeper pockets than those we choose, but we had been in contact with those guys, those individuals, for a few years, and we knew them and respected them and trusted them, so we decided to go for it and do the albums through those two labels.
But how come you got so many offers? You went from...
Because we were really good.
Yeah, it was through this concert on Nidrosian Black Mass and the spread.
Not the concert, but I think a lot of it has to do with the somebody like putting that demo online, spreading it there. But you know, it's a great demo, so why wouldn't we?
You'd say. Mm. I think you can. Can reach or you can go a long way just by believing in what you do is
the best thing
in the world.
If I didn't believe that Zwarte Døde was the best band in the world, I would not be sitting here today. I would probably
be sitting somewhere else.
Yeah. In some other band. No, I don't know. But I mean, you know, if we didn't believe 100% in what we were doing, we wouldn't be doing it. So, well, there's no point. There's no glory in becoming a known black metal band. I mean, sure, you get a few beers, but that's it. So,
But you've been playing a few concerts lately, so you have to go on tour.
Yeah. Well, for us, we are first and foremostly a live band, so it's really important for us to play live, more so than to release albums. And so, yeah, we've been touring Europe a lot this past 2 years. Yeah.
But since you're mostly a live band, you aren't thinking about making any new albums, or are you writing new songs?
No comment.
No comment? So
It remains to be seen.
So we might have a new album next year or in 10 years.
Yeah. It's some
depends on if we record it and throw it away or record it and it all depends.
Yeah.
We like it
but somewhere in the next 1 to 20 years may be possibly a new record, yeah.
Don't you think you will grow tired of playing the same 10 songs every time you play
the album? 10 songs? The album only has 4 songs, you know.
Yeah, but maybe the songs you threw away, right, if you count them, and the demo.
Oh no, man, we're not gonna put those songs again.
Maybe we could talk a bit about live, since you're mostly a live band.
Yeah.
You play a lot of live shows. What can we expect when we see a Sorted Early concert? What do you do to make it special?
What we do to make it special? Well, we bring our A-game, of course. But, you know, doing live shows gives us this kind of high, basically. And hopefully we can make that contagious, so that the audience can share, you know, this communal feeling, you know, this communal high. And, you know, hopefully we manage to alter the audience's consciousness, you know, to some extent. And I think that's it's the point with all good art, basically, be it black metal or whatever, that it takes you somewhere else. It alters your perception of, you know, the reality that you're existing in at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But what do you feel has been your best show until now? What's the best show you've done?
Every single one.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I guess there are differences between the audience too. Some are maybe too noisy at the wrong parts of the music, and some understand it. And sometimes you get a fucked up audience. Sometimes they understand everything.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's also part of the concert experience. Not only what you do as a band, because you're always good, as you say.
Yeah.
But what's the best experience for you when you take or consider the audience too into it?
Well, for me personally, when I see a room full of a few hundred people all moving to the, you know, the beat that we're making, you know, so it becomes like a shamanistic trance that everybody is experiencing together.
Mm-hmm. When the audience shares the same Mussolini high as we do, things fall into place.
But does that often happen, that you get the audience in the trance?
I think so. It depends on the material we play as well. If it's something that's less known, you know, then obviously it's not going to get the same reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as stuff off the album, always clicks.
Yeah. And it's been interesting to once the album was finally released after months and months of delays, to actually perform it. Yeah, perform the songs from the album finally after it was released, you could see like a huge difference in the reaction you'd get from the audience.
Mm.
Because before the release of the album, you know, most people were hearing this stuff for maybe the first time. But now, actually, we sometimes get sing-alongs and stuff like that. So But I don't know. We played in Brussels. What was it, in February, in the Trojan Black Mass. And apparently there were some people actually fucking in the audience, and I think that's awesome. So, you know, that's one thing.
That's cool, but it's also very weird.
Yeah, but we like weird, so it suits us perfectly.
But have you ever had people in the audience that you just wanted to throw out because they didn't take or understand the stuff?
Well, we were playing in Switzerland sometimes this summer, and there was some drunk guy who always keep falling down and like moving the state monitors, and you know, that pissed me off, so I just kicked him in the face. So that's one way to deal with it. And back in the day, because I didn't always play bass from like 2010 when I started doing bass along with the vocals, before that, if I would see something I didn't like, that usually meant a trip to the emergency room for the individual. And yeah, I mean, I just, you know, acting is reacting, you know? So it all depends on the situation, really.
Yeah.
I think it also comes into account that the more often we play live, the better we get.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And the audience starts to know you better and better, and they know how to react under the show too.
Yeah, could be. Yeah,
I don't know.
Sure.
I know. I come to understand that you won't talk about anything because this is radio. So you're careful about what you say and not. Do you have anything in particular you want to tell me? That is like not just typical boring interview stuff.
I'm gonna do acid and see Kraftwerk tomorrow night. No, I don't know. But fuck, I don't know, man. Now you put us on the spot.
No.
Yeah. It's always
something we would like to tell you that has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, this is your first time in Oslo.
Yeah, in Oslo. Yeah, yeah. So this is the third time in Norway. In total.
Yeah, you were in Trondheim and you in
Bergen.
Bergen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where we?
It's actually our first time in Oslo, not the Oslo airport.
Yeah. Which is one of the most horrible places on earth.
The airport in Oslo.
Yeah.
Why?
It's horrible. We've been stuck there a few times for just hours on end.
Yeah, and delays.
Yeah. And I think this is probably the airport that we hate most in all of Europe. That's the Oslo airport.
Oslo is like the cocaine capital of Europe. Where is the people?
They're taking cocaine.
Yeah, I guess busy.
Busy grinding their teeth.
Wow. No, but yeah. So,
what would we like to say?
Gardermoen is the worst place in the world. We have that clear.
Yeah, the Oslo airport.
Gardermoen.
Yeah.
Gardermoen. Yeah. Fuck Gardermoen.
Hail Keflavik.
Ah, fuck Keflavik.
Keflavik and fuck Gardermoen.
Fuck airports, general.
But you have to travel a lot when you're a band on tour.
Yes.
Airports.
Especially when you're living in Iceland, you know. We have not.
It's more like fuck Big Brother, you know, instead of the airports. Fuck all the security, you know, all the announcement. Oh, somebody is going to steal your luggage in 5 minutes. You know, it's, be afraid.
You can't take this toothpaste with you on the plane. You might be a terrorist. You know.
I was just about to bring my liquid nitrogen on my plane. Oh, I can't do that. Jesus fucking Christ.
But have you sometimes had really big trouble on airports with not getting your instruments with you or something?
No, not in airports, but we were playing in Switzerland this summer and we were actually denied access into the country.
What?
Yeah, we denied entrance into Swiss.
Because of the car, or the guy.
Yeah, this is like the worst rock star story in the world. We were like holed up at the border and they denied us entry into the country on the grounds that the tires on our band were too old.
Okay.
Mm, yeah.
That's not a joke.
Yeah.
It sounds like one, but it's not.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a joke, but you could have been refugees from, I don't know, Morocco or Somalia or something, maybe.
I don't know if the Swiss Border Patrol is colorblind or just retarded. I don't know. Could be both. I don't know. I would not put that past them, but.
You said verstander all the time.
Yeah, thankfully the drugs were in the other car, so
probably have a, you know, a small penis and are insecure about it or something like that.
Yeah,
might be.
That's why they seek out a position of authority over all.
Yeah, exactly. You can't come into my country. Your tires are too old.
Yeah.
They're not from Congo. His tires. Get the fuck out of here.
It's a lot of weird stories you get when you're a band. Corona told me that they were jailed in England for one day because they didn't have a work permit when they were going to play a few shows there. So when they got into the country and they found out you don't have a work permit, they had to cancel all their shows the same day they got there. And then they got jailed for a day. And they drove them to the boats to go back to Europe. And when they got there, their car was empty. It didn't have any gas anymore.
Yeah.
So they have to go back to jail for another 4 or 5 hours and then drive back to the boat, and then they could leave the country.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like all success.
Yeah. When we were playing in Bergen last year, squeeze him up. And I was standing backstage at this venue, which I have no idea what the name of is anymore. Doesn't matter. What does matter is that unnamed partners of ours, they have obtained by illegal means a lot of human remains to use as a part of their stage show. And I'm standing backstage and put out all the skulls and rotting heads and whatnot. And just standing there and lighting myself a cigarette, and some security guy from the venue comes over up to me and like, hey buddy, this is no good. You can't smoke here. Like, okay, I can't smoke here, but it's okay to have a rotting head on this table. Oh, yeah. Well, that doesn't concern me. But if you get caught smoking, they're going to send you to jail.
So,
which I thought was a really interesting insight into the Norwegian zeitgeist, I don't know.
We're used to rotting heads on concerts, maybe that's the.
But at least, you know, don't smoke.
No.
It's okay to rob graves, at least as long as you don't smoke while doing it.
That's so weird. But where, when you're. I just want to talk a bit about Iceland. Where do you go as a metalhead in Iceland? Do you sit just at home in your house or do you go out?
I think you would have to ask a regular metalhead in Iceland about that.
We don't call my
brother. No.
you don't go out with normal people.
No, we rather go out with normal people than metalheads in Iceland.
Yeah. Because all the other Iceland people from Iceland, they listen to Falkenbach and
No. They don't. I don't. Maybe three people in Iceland know what Falkenbach is.
Yeah. Also, like, metal is not such a cultural phenomenon in Iceland because there are 300,000 people living in Iceland. A lot more people live in Europe. And, you know, you can be a metalhead in Germany and all of your friends are metalheads, you know. There's just enough people to have that percentage of metalheads.
Yeah.
You don't tell that in Iceland, you know.
That may also be a good thing, because
yeah, I think it's a really good thing.
Yeah, it's like we were talking about earlier, the dogmatic thinking, the herd mentality of the metal scene in Europe versus what, you know, is our reality back home, because I think I can speak for all of us when I say that we're more interested in going to raves than going to a local metal gig in Iceland. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the metal scene in Iceland, like, everything that we hate about metal is popular. in metal in Iceland.
I
do you
would
know
say that we've outgrown like cultism a bit, you know. I don't really give a shit anymore about some fucking band that released something on 33 you know, copies, you know, it's just ridiculous. And some 13-year-old guys collecting that stuff, it's hilarious, you know, fuck it.
Yeah, to seek recognition from some 40-year-old virgin who lives in his mom's basement and collects welfare, you know, I don't give a fuck what that guy thinks. So,
well, I went to Bach Canyon this one time. I could see these fucking German people with patches, you know, like 50 patches ranging from Iron Maiden to like Batane, you know, all over, just to seek recognition from his fellow man. Just like all over, you know, made no sense. It's like a cluster of a human being with no sense of
identity.
Yeah, it's insecurity. I think it's it has nothing to do with us as individuals. Like,
yeah, exactly. It has nothing to do with us at all.
We could talk like shit about metalheads.
We can talk shit about everything.
We'll be talking shit about ourselves like, to some extent, you know.
But it's still interesting because you have another view on this than a lot of other people,
mm-hmm.
like the German patch
mafia. Nothing to lose. That's.
It was like we were playing at this festival in Germany last year. And like all true rock stars, we were trying to score some weed. And the only response that we would get from the German West crowd was, "Weed, that is for false people."
It was actually like a sound, we found out later, like a sound engineer from the Death Cult Festival. He told us that we were false people and nigger lovers and something because we just really love weed.
That's a new one.
No, then you know. Then I look at it from that viewpoint. You know, he, it's a German guy who's been taught to drink alcohol, which is feces of a mushroom, but feces that the mushroom leaves behind to make people feel intoxicated. And you're basically just drinking feces, drinking shit. And he's telling me that I'm something that I'm not because of his own insecurities. It's ridiculous.
It's because when you have this idea like this is what is true, this is what is wrong, you know, or not true or false or whatever, and then somebody comes along and he challenges your worldview because you're an insecure dickhead with a patched vest somewhere in Germany. Of course you're going to take offense to that, you know.
I don't
because
know.
Of your insecurities, you know.
I still don't know what's like a radio friendly of the stuff we're saying, but
if it's okay for you, I can play anything.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I'm just censoring it
if you don't want me to censor it. I won't.
Fuck censorship.
Yeah, fuck censorship. I'm not saying that I wouldn't. I'm not saying I'm not really meaning the stuff I'm saying. I'm just saying that maybe this is not for the. So the 13-year-old guy was like, "Hey, so what did they do?" And he reads a lot like, "Oh, those guys, they're completely different from what I would have thought." You know, it's
no,
a
bunch
of
pretentious
kids.
Don't the 13-year-old should learn that when he's young instead of going in the same trap as everyone does?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're 13, you are insecure,
mm-hmm.
and you will, you want that patch vest because all the big guys have it. You don't learn to think as an individual before you are like 25, maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's okay to tell a 13-year-old all this.
Leave me out.
Yeah. And I think that more metalheads, if you can call it that, in general, should think a bit outside the box.
Exactly.
There is one thing that I absolutely hate about the whole metalhead thing. It is the mentality, the idea that you're wearing a shirt by some band that I like. And we run into each other. We don't know each other, but we see each other down the street. And then all of a sudden, you know, people have this sense of entitlement that you and I should be friends because you like the same band as me, you know. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
And this whole, like, forced brotherhood of metalheads is probably the most pathetic thing, most pathetic social construct that I know of right now.
But that also comes from people outside the metal crowd. because they think that all metalheads are alike, but the truth is that there are many genres within metal.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, but this is an idea that is perpetuated by the metal crowd, you know. If you look at the more mainstream manifestations of the like modern metalhead, you know, like this Metalhead's Journey documentaries and all that, there's always this forced sense of brotherhood and, you know, camaraderie, you know, that just because you have the same Slayer LP as me, that I am now entitled to your friendship and your respect.
It's something like saying metal is supposed to be about unity and individualism at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
You're trying to see yourself as an individual within a group of other individuals that are all, experiencing themselves as the, you know.
Reminds me of this like this comic strip I saw some years ago with all these goth kids standing around, and they all say in unison, "We got matching tattoos to express our individuality." I think that's like the core of the this forced sense of brotherhood thing.
It is.
And the metal crowd, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I guess also that you as a band feel it even more because even more people want to be friends with you because you are known.
Yeah.
You are stars, people are fans.
Yeah, we have this, you know, as musicians who play festivals, you know, popular festivals, whatever, that we have this social status as something bigger than we are in reality. Because in reality, we are just four scumbags from Iceland who like good music and metaphysical philosophy and weed. I don't know, man. It's irritating. I mean, it's nice to get like good show, you know, great record, whatever. It's nice to get that pat on the back, but it's something that we can live without. And like, when it becomes intrusive to your personal space, you know what I mean? Then, yeah, I would like to keep a certain distance between myself and
regarding the
consumers.
Yeah, regarding pats on the back, I think just have to say this because the sole reason Homo sapiens talks to each other, has conversation, is to upheave the ego, and the ego kind of resembles the false self. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm.
A constructed self.
Yeah. So people should choose their words more carefully. Every individual
and
on
by
this
the way,
planet.
Yeah. And we, by the way, released a back patch the other day. It would go great on your denim vest, so you should buy it right now. You can't record my thumbs up, whatever. If you live in Germany, you need that back patch now.
I always appreciate it more as well when people tell me that maybe we didn't do such a good job after a show. When somebody is man enough to come up to me and say something else than, hey man,
what
a great job you did. Then.
But what do you say when someone says that your show wasn't that good, since you're the best in the world?
Well, then I have some... you can't be the best in the world unless you work it. You know?
Yeah.
Unless you work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if work somebody it. Points something out, then I have something to work on, and the next show can be better.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Always strive for perfection, you know. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have a higher goal to strive for, you, then you're gonna become stagnant, both as an artist and as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So
please tell us that we suck.
Yeah, have the decency to tell us when we suck.
Clear message. But this all makes a lot of sense. But still, I'm thinking you are also probably fans of some bands out there in the world.
Yeah.
Would there be any bands where you, if you met them, would be really starstruck and like this German fan, like being, oh my god, I love you, this show. And
yeah, I mean, if Michael Gira from Swans would walk into this room right now, I'd probably go all like giggly schoolgirl on him, but
that's funny, yeah. Because I would maybe think he was here to serve me food. So, we had this
but I don't know. I mean, no, I don't. I don't know. I haven't been starstruck yet. Oh, I was starstruck once when I met David Lynch, but apart from that, I think I've never been starstruck. So hard to say.
Mm. I've probably been starstruck many times, but I don't know.
Definitely some.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, they aren't so different from us.
We are all human beings.
Yeah. We're all the same.
Exactly.
And everything we do are from egoistic reasons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's true. Mm. But we should at least be honest about our narcissistic and egotistical
sentences.
Du har hørt et intervju med Svartidaudi fra 2013. De skal spille sammen med Sinmara på Blå I Oslo den 30. september og på Good Omens I Trondheim den 2. oktober. Neste vekka tar vi en runde med Nakash, som også konsertaktuell.
Som certified underground elitist så jeg selvfølgelig ekstremt kritisk til det meste. Nei, det vel litt som alltid. Det kommer jo litt bra.
Liker du black metal, kan du for eksempel høre tidligere Jernverke-episoder med 1349, Mistyrming, Mork og Whoredom Rife. Abonner på Jernverke podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverke.com. Og hvis du kan, legg igjen en femstjerner av Jernverke der du lytter, det bidrar til at flere får med seg podcasten. Og hvis du vil, så kan du også donere noen kroner for at jeg skal kunne fortsette med podcasten. Det gjør du via Patreon eller Vips. Og hvordan det gjøres kan du lese nederst I episodebeskrivelser. Husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook for månedens album fra Katakomben, diskusjoner, konkurranser og nyheter. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og gir deg et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Tusen takk for at du hører på.